With that, I'd like to announce some very nice woodworking here in the Y2025. So please give a warm applause to Molenaar.
Thank you. I'm Molenaar. Molenaar means miller in Dutch, and I'm also a miller at this beautiful sawmill that you can see there. I worked at a historic theme park, and I did a course in instruments building, and those two together led me to a journey reinvent instruments in the way that I wanted to make them in a historically correct way so I could understand them. The course in instrument building was given by Paul Beekhuizen at the TU Technical University of Delft. He taught me how to make instruments as bass guitars were often built and woodwind instruments. And I also like to dedicate this talk to Olaf Gaubitz, who is a leather archaeologist and once wrote that you could only understand a historical shoe if you made it yourself. And that I can fully relate to, because you can look at things all you want, but only if you have the hands-on experience you know what works, what doesn't, what takes a lot of time, what takes little time. So that's what this talk is about. So I'd like to give you a guided tour back in history. So if you want to, if you invent time travel and want to apply for a job as an instrument builder, then you have some background. Because that was what I ideally want to do, get an apprenticeship with a medieval woodworker. But yeah, that's probably not going to work. The outline of this talk is first what I want, the things that I encountered in my life, the things I wanted to know, then some theory about what we know already, and I will try to explain it in terms that a medieval woodworker would be able to understand. And I will finish with what I learned by actually doing things. So what I want is an apprenticeship with a medieval or a Renaissance woodworker to make instruments in a historical correct way so that I can understand why we do things a certain way, why we changed to some other techniques, what were the tools of the time, how did we use them, those kinds of things. Here you see me at a hackerspace, RefSpace, on my whip lathe, trying to do some wood turning, which was already difficult enough. What I also want is, I found this tabber pipe, which I have a 3D printed version of here. I measured it at the archaeological depot in Leiden. Archaeological depots are really nice. The archaeologists are really helpful. You don't have to be an institution or whatever. You can just call them, ask them. Lots of those organizations have a website where you can just type in what you're looking for. And if you don't find what you're looking for, you can send them an email and they'd like to help you. For example, I asked this in the province, our depot, and they said, well, we don't have any, but they sent me to Leiden, and I got this one. You can see that there's something missing here. You can look through those holes, the backside is missing, and also there was a block which was really strange. So I measured it, and I try to reconstruct it. The block I didn't believe, because it was really like a triangle and a modern recorder block is straight, but there's no cavity at the top part, so I think what should be kind of triangle-ish. And then I started making it, and I slanted it more and more and more and more. And when I got exactly the shape that was in there, it started to work. That's also the person that was most in the way of my project was me, because I have to let go of everything I know. A lot of things are obvious today, but they weren't invented in the past. This is an easy instrument, so I thought, well, if I'm going to make something, let's make this one. These slides, the pink ones with the modern glasses, are looking in the present. And if the slides get darker, then I'm looking through historical glasses, which you will see. Also, as a kid, I just started to play the recorder, like so many kids. And there was a little leaflet in there which says, which other instrument does this factory make? And there are instruments like a Baroque raquette, a Renaissance raquette, the Krumhorn, which are totally strange. And, well, this is a Baroque raquette. It looks like it comes from another world. It's to appreciate it, the sound goes in here. There is the bore goes up and down inside, and later in the middle it comes out here. So if you unfold it, it's about 2 meters or so long. So it's a very low instrument. I can try to play the lowest note for you, which is a... But somebody has to make it, and why? Why would anyone make such a thing? And because it's complicated, it's really hard to make. If you had used keys, you could of course make the very long instruments. They have existed as well. There's a nice picture of a really long instrument which needed some support to play. But this is one of the things that I wanted to understand. So this is about going back into history and looking back is hard. You see, I try to look through historical glasses with a glow in the dark Y2025 logo. Everything was different. There were no worldwide standards. The documentation is really sparse because most craftsmen wouldn't be able to write, because that would mean they would learn Latin, and they didn't. So there's hardly any documentation. There are finds, sometimes in museums, that are playable, but like the tabard pipe you saw, it wasn't playable at all. There was different technology back then, and there was a different society with every aspect in it, and they all have their influence on the instruments, I think. So these are a few finds that would be relevant to my investigations. This is one of the oldest instruments, recorders found in the Netherlands, in Dordrecht. You can see it has two finger holes, because in history they do not know if you play it like this or if you play it like this. Up until, say, 70, 50, all instruments are symmetrical. Even a bassoon, which is totally asymmetrical, but the finger holes are still in one line. And they have the nice butterfly keys, so you can reach them with your little finger. So you, as an owner of these instruments, you were supposed to plug one with a little bit of wax and use the other one, but the maker wouldn't know which one you would prefer. Or if he would know, he would still make it like this so you could give it away to someone else. The documentation that is there is, for example, the first musical instrument encyclopedia, 1620, so not medieval, but Renaissance. It's a really nice book. The first part is in Latin, so hard to read, but that's about organs and songs and church music. The second volume is the encyclopedia in which he describes all the instruments with scales, drawings, And we can really measure from those skills. And this is one of them. It's not the best copy, but there's a skill here in Braunschweig feet. Every city has its own measurement units, but the first page shows the foot itself. So we actually know how long they were and what they look like and even what they sound like because he describes it. Going for a tether pipe like this, there's a tether pipe here. This is the grown-up version. It would be about this long, I think, which was always played with a drum. So this can be played with one hand, and you will play a drum with the other hand. So really great, this one for kids, but also if you would like to sing in a cafe or in a tavern, then it would be a nice instrument. These are historical units. They have come with their own problems as well. You see here the foot from Amsterdam, the one from Den Bosch, a city in the Netherlands, and this is the Rhineland foot, which was used in Leiden throughout the entire Middle Ages. And the length of a foot was the note A. So if you had a recorder from Amsterdam and your niece was over from Leiden and you tried to play together, it would sound really, really awful. The same with your cousin from Den Bosch, because it was slightly different, which gives a nice wobble in the low notes and is really awful in the higher notes. So recorders are quite easy to make. But they were not that popular. Well, they were as a child's toy, obviously, because there have a lot of them been found. But there were other instruments that didn't suffer from this. For example, if you have a fiddle, the precursor of the violin, you can tune it whatever you like. You can also play it in any key you like. And so if you have a fiddle from Amsterdam and one from Den Bosch, you could play together. Also in taverns, you see a lot of people playing bagpipes, and that removes the need to play together altogether because you have an entire orchestra resting on your shoulders. So there are a lot of folk songs where multiple fiddlers play together, and you have depictions of bagpipe players in taverns, etc. Those were the really popular instruments. Well, mainly because things like this. And in the musical scales, the third and the fifth are quite natural in overtones, but the minor second was something that was also not the same in one town as in another. So how you subdivided the finer details of the scale was also open for debate. Really nice. So I wanted to learn. If there's no medieval master around, then what do? We go to YouTube. But yeah, Renaissance or medieval YouTube, well, there's something like Facebook. The German town of Nuremberg had a foundation where they could house 12 brothers, the 12 people who could do their profession there. And you see here a shoemaker, for example, holding a shoemaker's awl. And you see that he always has it in his hand. And that says a lot about shoemaking, because from this picture we can see he holds it in his hand. We know the shape, and from that we can deduct that with an awl in your hand, with the right motions, it's not in the way, and if you put it on the table, it will roll away. So you can learn by looking at these pictures, leather work or wood turning or whatever. The drawback is each person was allowed one selfie, and he even didn't make it himself. But it shows light, nice details. For example, this leather knife And the awl and benches and even the hatch, because there was no glass in the window, so he would put something on that shows his profession and you would know that you could buy your shoes there. I want to give you some theory. Normally in the present days we use vibrations per second, but that's only useful if you use a watch or a clock to measure time. And in earlier times we used sundials for that, so if vibrations per second, well, is that a summer second, is that a winter second, is it a day second, is it a night second? It's a really strange way of measuring things. So all tunings are in pipe length, feet and inches. So if I have a pipe of a Rhineland inch here, then this gives a note A, and if I have one that's half as long, then it is an octave higher, and that's how we can tune an instrument. And these are, if you have a half or a third, then you have the natural overtones of the pipe. And also the note A is the A, so we can relate to that for the rest of the tuning. I'll skip this one because it doesn't really relate to the whistle I'm making, but Reed's sound behaves slightly different. You can produce overtones. If you blow harder on a pipe, you get a higher harmonic. And especially with a tabor pipe like this, it's how it is played. So the normal ground octave you won't use, that would be really soft. I can't even blow it now. Now, this is the ground one. Normally you start here. And then you close all the holes again. And you get to the entire octave, and that's why it is only three holes and you can play the whole instrument. And if you make it really sharp, which the 3D printer doesn't do, alas, then you can get much higher and much more annoying than this. also, in a normal recorder, at some point you close your thumb hole half and you can continue with it's the same principle. You use the higher harmonics in the pipe. And what it does, if you play the ground octave, there will be a wave standing in there. And if you overblow it, there will be a positive and a negative wave in there. And you can basically stack more waves into the pipe. And that makes it effectively shorter without having to cut something off. So going back to this tabor pipe, there was something missing, but if we measure it in Rhineland inches, which was done in Leiden, we can still say what tuning it was. I suspected it would be tuned in C, because that was the scale for simple songs, like children's songs, like tavern songs, etc. You would use the scale of C, which we still do on a recorder. And if we do that, then C, D, E, F, G, A. Opening one hole would be a note A, and then I have overblown it two times, so there were three waves, a positive, a negative, and a positive inside the pipe. So if this and this distance is related to the note A, I can prove it is tuned in C. Now, because there are three waves, I have to divide the measured distance, which is exactly 4.5 Rhineland inch, in three, and I get a pipe length of 1.5 inch. A Rhineland foot is 12 inches, so half of it is 6 inches, a quarter of it is 3 inches, and an eighth of a foot is 1.5 inches. So this is really the note A, and we know what tuning it is, even though the instrument is not complete. Now the section of what I learned. timing is important. If you make an instrument like this on a modern lathe, making the bore takes about 10 minutes, maybe even less because it's such a short instrument. If I want to make it conical, it would take more than a working day. And the early instruments are all cylindrical, like this one. It's a cylindrical instrument, and later versions like this one are conical. And at some point they started moving from a cylindrical to conical instruments. Even the recorder has a conical bore, even though it doesn't need it. It doesn't use it. It gets narrower to the end instead of wider. So why did they do that? Well, from a modern perspective, it's madness. People try things, but they wouldn't try to put such an amount of work in it without knowing what came out. My theory is that if you use a reamer, you drill a bore with a spoon drill or with a spiral head drill, and that's you do it by hand, and it makes a bore, but maybe not as smooth as you would want. And they would know that the smoother the bore is, the more bright the sound would be that comes out. So I think that they used a reamer, which is always conical, just to get a straighter and a smoother bore. Because a reamer, if you make it straight, you might make it either too small or too large, and that wouldn't work, so they would build it slightly tapered, and then you get conical instruments. Also, there are quite complicated instruments. If you see here, these are the Renaissance rackets, which is this instrument, which is extremely hard to make. The sound goes in here, then the bore goes up and down, snaking all around to there is an exit hole here. And why would they make complicated things like this? Also, there's a whole family of it. So you have the smallest one is about this size, I think. You could almost swallow it. Up till the very bass thing, which is only this size. Yeah. It's almost as if that is on purpose. And yes, I think it was. If you would become a master in the guild system, you had to make a masterpiece. And I think these were proofs of work, as we call it today, proofs of skill, that you could really prove you could build any instrument you like in any shape you like. And of course, if you were a master and you would make something like this, then you would put it in your workshop. And if someone came in and said, well, what is it? And can you play it? And then you... Well, the reed is not fully awake yet, but someone might say, well, yeah, I like that. Can you make one of them? And then it becomes a regular instrument. The other thing I learned is, of course, I have to use wood turning for that, and I have to reinvent it as well. Because at a lot of medieval festivals, you see wood turners, and they also always place a little piece of wood, rest their modern chisels on it, and they start wood turning with a historic lathe, but with modern tools. And this is what the Nuremberger Hausbuch, the Hausbuch from Nuremberg says, there is no such tool rest and the chisel are totally different. So I had to reinvent the wood turning as well. And what I found out is that the chisel was wide, so you could put it on there without the edges catching the wood and have it thrown out of your hand. You have the tendency to rest your chisel on the workpiece, and then you get eccentric things like there. It will get round, but not centric. And of course, for an instrument, you will make the bore first, then put it on a lathe, so you want it centric. Because otherwise, you will just hit the side, as I did here with this flute, after a very long time of drilling by hand. But you learn from it. What if you want to try medieval woodturning, I'd say try to just not get it, and then the extremities take it off, and that's the way to get things cylindrical. And that's about where I am in my quest for woodworking making instruments now. I will be giving a workshop in medieval woodturning at 2:00. And with that, I would like to end my presentation.
Thank you very much for this very good talk. Where will the workshop be?
In the HSNL village.
HSNL village, 2:00. If everybody here shows up, then we get a lot of new apprentices and you can be the master. So that,
I hope so.
And we start a new guild of hacker woodturners.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's start the revolution now.
Yeah, hacking archaeology.
Are there any questions from the audience? The open mic is open. Go ahead.
Thanks. Is that on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I think. Please talk very closely in the microphone. Okay. In this
tent. So my question is, yeah. you've observed and mastered the history of woodwind instruments.
Yeah.
And the present, and also 3D printing. And
yeah.
Do you have any view on, after the past, the present, what will the future bring for woodwind?
Everything, I think. If you go to the Musical Instruments Museum in Brussels, for example, you see quite a number of interesting instruments. There have been a lot of artful installations. There's, for example, a trombone made of glass with all glass rods and a kind of flower shape soundboard. You name it, people invent it, and even things I would never have thought of myself or have been invented. There is an instrument called a theremin, which was invented by a Russian spy, where they would like to have spying on people and then use radio waves for that. And then he found out that if you hold your hand near the antenna, then that would influence the antenna. So you have two antennas, one for the volume and one for the pitch. And it became an instrument, and he became very famous as an instrument builder and not as a spy. So there are all kinds of directions you can go, and I really invite you to take any direction you want to make music.
Thank you. Other question?
Thank you. Thank you for the really interesting talk. Mm-hmm. I'll be greedy and have two questions, actually.
Yeah.
My first question is, did you study paintings from that era that would probably inspire you to figure out what the instrument is?
Yes, I studied some paintings. They're not always equally clear, and sometimes there's an instrument depicted, but you can see kind of the shape. Even in the, if I go back, this is quite schematic, and in paintings it's also quite schematic. There are really nice instruments in painting, for example, the tromba marina, which is a kind of fiddle which has to sound like a trumpet. And after investigating this, the story of the tromba marina was that nuns would not be allowed to play a trumpet because they were feminine and weak, and you couldn't allow them, and which is, of course, totally nonsense. There are really good bagpipe players which are female and have an orchestra on their shoulder and lungs like two horses. but I think that might have been a masterpiece too. Because if you make a fiddle that sounds like a trumpet, it's a challenge. But maybe that's an interpretation. Maybe there's a story from the time. I don't know. But I look differently at paintings now. But still, there are a lot of people that show this picture while doing the medieval wood turning, and they will say, well, that there's no tool rest because the people who painted this didn't know what they were painting. No, they did know what they were painting. They did some things schematically because, yeah, this doesn't stand up, but it's just you have a raised branch that's flexible and that's enough.
And also my second question is like, are those instruments in our day not really popular? Like, do you have a theory why like the popularity goes down for...
I heard that these instruments weren't really popular in the past as well.
Ah. Okay, that explains.
Some were, there's for example the Krumhorn, which is a reed instrument which is bent. There's also the straight version and it's called Cornemuse. The reason for making it bent, there's no reason other than being complicated. So that's why I think it's a masterpiece. It sounds the same, it plays the same, it's basically the same instrument. Only you have to be a master to make something like that.
It's the premium version.
Huh?
It's the premium version.
Something like that. The joke in the instrument course was that you had to train a woodworm first to make one of these.
Thank you.
Before I go to you, are there any questions from the signals, from the online? No online questions? Then please go ahead in real life.
So in addition to different lengths, I understand that the different cities also had different number of inches. The Amsterdam foot had 11 inches.
Yeah.
Did that give rise to different scales if you have 11 divisions instead of 12?
Maybe for the final details, but I don't think so, because the harmonic decides the really popular scales, the third and the fifth are in the harmonic range, so you still have to divide your 11 inches into the half and the third, etc. But yeah, if you find a recorder from Amsterdam or Rotterdam, which both have 11 inches in a foot, or one from Leiden, I really say pick the one from Leiden, because as you saw, the calculation is much easier.
Hello, and thank you very much for a fantastic talk. I was curious of how much you've noticed about the evolution of instruments as you've researched from this sort of thing into modern instruments which have become really popular, like oboes and clarinets and such like.
Yeah. I think the guild system also had popular designs. If you look at shoes, for example, you would find the same shoe in Scandinavia or Switzerland or Holland, even though the underground is totally different. I think in the guild system there are also instruments and families, and that there are standards for them, and at some point someone invents a new system, a new instrument, it becomes popular, but that is then still the same design. At some point there is, but it's after the Middle Ages, people start investigating how to do it better. So you get a really defined violin that is more defined by the sound and how it vibrates, and a fiddle is just anything vaguely violin shaped. For example, we know that Böhm, known for the Böhm system, he was the son of a blacksmith, son of a silversmith, sorry, and he knew that metal pipes were really smooth on the inside, and he actually wanted to know what the best place for the holes was from a scientific purpose. And that's why a wooden flute has all these keys, because the keys are not at the comfortable places for your fingers, but they are at the right place for ending the pipe. And of course it's made of silver or metal, because he was the son of a silversmith, and it gave a really sparkling, smooth sound. And it's still in use today. And later on they would do that on other instruments as well, as the oboe, the clarinet, and the bassoon, etc.
Thank you.
Yep.
Hi. So I was wondering if there was a difference or an evolution in the boring of the finger holes. Did they also start off conical? Or do you see that in certain instruments that they stay or change to be tapered?
I think that the finger hole started just like being bored cylindrical. Mm-hmm. Most reed instruments from that time are just meant to be to play one octave. The slide I skipped, I can show it again. If you have a pipe that is open, I can blow it. If you close the pipe, you need only half of it. So this gives you the same note, but it sounds a bit different because it's closed on one end. From a modern perspective, the air pressure can build up against the closed end, and here it needs the middle of the end because both ends are open. Reed instruments behave like a closed end, and that means that the octave, the first overtone, cannot be in the same pipe. Because then this pipe, this side would be open again, and it's closed, so it only has half the overtones. So you could overblow it, you could not overblow it, and therefore you had one octave. And then you drill straight bores. For more modern instruments, you can overblow them because they're conical. That overblows differently. And then you have to undercut the holes and make them conical, so they are still pure sounding when you overblow them. So I think that's a later development.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
I think final question.
Well, I was wondering if there's any well-documented history of woodwind instruments outside Europe. I believe woodwind instruments were made all over the globe, and maybe in Asia some well-documented pieces can be found that gives another perspective again.
Yeah, probably. I didn't look at instruments from Asia, but I think there are a lot of pictures of them, at least from musician playing instruments. Also, Michael Praetorius shows instruments from all over the world, and he even shows some theoretical instruments that were mentioned in the Bibles. In the Bible with, I think, three mouthpieces and four bells, because the Trinity would play the instruments and the four evangelists would speak them. It looks like some tubular frame with things attached. It doesn't even show the skills because it's really theoretical, but he shows some instruments from America as well. And from but also without skills. So there are some depictions of them, but not really in such a good way that we can measure from them. But maybe there are finds in America, for example, for Indian instruments.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks again, Molinar.